This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. He's set to join us in just a moment. First off, let's look at this year's corn crop and the condition ratings. Brad Rippey, meteorologist with USDA, has this update.
This year's crop still coming in quite a bit better than last year at this time, when the corn was rated 67% good to excellent and 10% very poor to poor. Only 6 of the 18 reporting states into double digits for very poor to poor ratings, but most of those are low-end double digits. And as for the Midwest, we only have 2 states reaching that criterion. Illinois, 11% very poor to poor. Indiana, 10%. So you still have to look long and hard to find large-scale problems with this 2025 corn crop.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago. Okay, Bob, grains. How much of that move that we saw on Monday was technical? How much of it might have been fundamental? And then, well, how much of it simply social media?
Well, in terms of soybeans, I think it was a combination of all three of those, the technical, fundamental, and social media related. So we got the social media post from President Trump over the weekend requesting China to buy a substantially larger amount of U.S. soybeans, and we'll just have to see if that plays out. But that was enough to at least help the market or give the market a reason to rally on the day today from the post. But then also just looking at the market technically, looking at the longer-term trend on a daily chart of the November soybeans, we've gotten towards the lower end of the trading range. So anybody who's a value-oriented technical trader seeking to find some kind of trading range that the market has found a balance with, they've definitely probably been eyeing the lower end of the 10s to the high 90s as an area to maybe start dabbling on the long side to see if things just kind of remain as they were, which would mean that we're at a value area towards the lower end of the value area, and maybe we get some kind of retracement back up. So technically, that would be an interesting bid to the market. So we've got those two working. And then in terms of the fundamental side, well, we've got a pretty big report due out tomorrow, the August 12 USDA report. So in as much as the primary trend has been to the downside, I would imagine that there are some traders who, if they were fortunate to be on the short side of the equation, especially if you're a speculator, you might want to go ahead and lock in some profits. So I think that was another element that helped to push the soybeans higher. So obviously they pretty much stood on their own as a market that found a pretty substantial bid up around 20 cents or so, depending on whether you're looking at the SEP contract all the way at least out to January. Whereas corn and wheat didn't necessarily follow suit. So corn today just up a couple cents. Wheat pretty much steady, danced around steady throughout most of the day. And for that, those particular markets, really, if you look at corn, I think one of the primary drivers is how much business we're doing out there. So in terms of demand and exports, granted, we did see another flash sale of 125,000 metric tons. Last week, I think we ended up a little over 3 million metric tons of new crop sales. So business is getting done. But even so, the market really hasn't found any kind of considerable bid to it. And I think it's primarily due to the prioritization of the marketplace, looking at the size of the coming crop. And we'll go over that in a moment in terms of expectations for the USDA report. Also, just looking elsewhere in the world, from the global supply side of the equation, the Brazil safrinha harvest is about 80%, give or take. Ukraine corn output has been revised higher. French corn output, due to heat and dryness, maybe a little bit lower, but net-net with the large size of the Brazil safrinha corn harvest and adding to that a bit more supply out of Ukraine, that's really where the market has its focus. It's just the amount that's out there and whether or not the U.S. at some point is going to be in a more competitive state. So we'll see how that plays out. And then in terms of wheat, yeah, you look at the board, you look at the prices, sitting there towards the lows, came off them just a bit, but basically sitting the lower 10% of the range or so, in my opinion. And really, I don't know if there's a whole lot of new developments that are happening in wheat tends to be more of a follower at the moment. Funds are heavily net short, so there is always the risk if some catalyst does come along, perhaps a trade deal, that you might see some pretty significant short covering. So that's more of a hope than a plan to see if that happens. In terms of the supply side of the equation for worldwide scenario, you know, for Russia, for example, ICAR bumped their crop expectations to about 84.5 million metric tons. Of that, they expect 41.5 to be exported. Sovacon trimmed, okay, opposite of ICAR, they trimmed the forecast about 83.3. So a bit of divergence there in terms of expectations on the quantity of the crop out of Russia, but still within about a 1.2 million metric ton differential. So I would say that it's definitely manageable. Ukraine, basically, it looks like their outlook is roughly around 21 million metric tons. APK Inform private analysts came in at 19.7 with exports at 13.9. So maybe things are tightening up a bit there, which would help out the wheat market. And also adding to that would be France. Their crop is around 33.1 guesstimates, and that's slightly higher month on month. Okay, so that might be a little bit offsetting element to Ukraine. So again, I guess just as data, we look at these numbers in terms of expectations, and it's probably just more of the same. So the market just needs some kind of catalyst to really find some kind of footing and get some business done and compete at a better pace than it has, right? And then maybe we can see these prices start to rotate back around. Now, in terms of the report that's due out tomorrow, in terms of the old crop U.S. grain ending stocks relative to the previous USDA report, the trade on average is looking for lower numbers, which should be bullish, right? But offsetting that is the fact for the new crop, the 25-26 marketing year, the trade is looking for higher numbers than previously published from the USDA, and not by a small margin. These are, you know, relatively, say, you know, for corn, the grain ending stock number is now estimated at 1.93 billion bushels. Previous report from the USDA was 1.66. And then for soybeans, 358 million is the expectation, average guesstimate, whereas prior was 310. So rather significant numbers in terms of expectations for the grain ending stocks for this current marketing year that we're rolling into here. So that definitely offsets primarily what we're seeing in terms of expectations of things getting tighter for the old crop. As for wheat, expectations that I see, 883 million bushels for this new crop year coming up versus the USDA's 890, so relatively friendly there. And we could break it into the corn production number and the soybean production individually and also yields, but net-net, relative to the last report that came out from the USDA, looks like yield is going to be tweaked higher for corn, and expectations is for yield to be tweaked higher for soybeans, which obviously translates into greater supply. Whereas for the 25-26 wheat production, we're actually looking for a bit tighter numbers relative to the latest USDA report. So this market basically gives you a little bit of everything. All right, we'll see how it wants to absorb the information when it comes from the USDA. Perhaps there'll be a catalyst to kind of hopefully boost these markets higher. I also just want to mention real quick here, in terms of the world grain ending stock, so all those prior numbers I gave you were the U.S., but if we look at the expectations for the world grain ending stocks, and here's the crux of the problem, we're looking for upticks both in the corn and the soybean, whereas wheat is more of a push. So worldwide, ample supply at the moment, and that is what the market has been trying to price in for the last, you know, several weeks that we've seen prices just kind of considerably and consistently erode. So we'll see how that plays out. That number comes out mid-afternoon tomorrow, right around 11 o'clock my time, Central Time. We'll see what the USDA delivers, and we'll take it from there.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Want to reduce your cottonseed cost up to 75% without sacrificing yield or quality? Try BSD9X from Brownfield Seed and Delenning. BSD9X is extremely versatile and is right at home on any acre. Large-seeded, tremendous early season vigor, and yields at the top of university trials. For only $125 a bag, boost your bottom line with BSD9X from Brownfield Seed and Delenning. Call 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago. Bob, let's talk about cattle on Monday following a limit move lower on Friday. What can we read into the latest moves?
Well, the fact that the market didn't end up limit down again today kind of tells me that it's not necessarily ready to give up the bullish ghost as of yet. The fundamentals for the cattle market are still solid. It's just a matter of how far and how fast we've come in terms of price and whether or not that's going to have some kind of material impact in terms of the back end of the equation, which is restaurant sales, food service sales, and then obviously consumers choosing beef, continue to choose beef, while they're at the grocery store. So that's the big question, right? Just 6-7 trading days ago or so, we also had a pretty good move to the downside in live cattle futures. This was back on the 31st of July, and the next couple days and into last week, the market held steady and rallied into new highs. So it seems like the market relatively recently was given a model of what's going to happen when we have a huge push to the downside in the cattle market. And the answer just a week and a half ago was shrug it off and move higher. So that might have been in the psychology a little bit of what's going on and why the market was able to sustain some gains today. Generally speaking, choice cutout up from the prior week last week, so that suggests that wholesale demand stayed fairly firm, which is a good thing. Beef production on the week ran about 7% below a year ago, so that's supportive on the supply side of the equation. Still got the tight cow slaughter, lower beef imports into the fall, that's the expectations, and that leans towards a tightening lean beef supply. So again, that's the bull side of the equation for cattle that just doesn't seem to be easily shrugged off at the moment. As for pork, packer margins are okay. We got estimates of about $17 per head for non-integrators, $73 a head for integrators. So in terms of throughput and chain speed, that's supportive. Working against that a bit is the structure of the market showing that going into the winter months of lean hog futures, there's a discount to the October. So we'll keep an eye on that. Exports are softening. Mexico is the wild card, but we've got pretty good competition that's building from Brazil and Latin America, and also the China backdrop is obviously weak, with the industry discussing roughly cutting about 1 million sows amid oversupply in China. So in as much as they're looking to reduce their hog supply, why would they be shopping for more elsewhere? So we'll see how this all plays out. We do get the grain numbers tomorrow. That can have an impact in the livestock futures, and we'll see what happens from there.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. All right, Bob, let's talk contact info. How can we reach you one-on-one?
Sure. Contact information, you can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053, or reach out via email at bmaurer@manducatrading.com, or come visit our website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com, and you can reach out that way also.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
A weekend visit in the Midwest for Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins included
the University of Nebraska and this resource center. We got to tour some great facilities looking at all of the innovative and groundbreaking research that the University of Nebraska is undertaking right now in partnership with USDA and other great partners.
Touring the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's Eastern Nebraska Research Extension and Education Center. Audio courtesy of the American Ag Network.
In addition to housing over 6,000 head of livestock for research and teaching, the center offers extension and education programming.
Later Saturday,
driving from Nebraska to Iowa in the Iowa State Fair.
In addition to participation of events on the fairgrounds, such as a turn at the Celebrity Chef Pork Tent, the secretary announced the latest round of presidential appointments to USDA senior leadership. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.